Now, during fancy dress, aren't there things going on all over the place?
No, it's a dance. It's all in the gym. And then after the dance is over, they have the fireworks, which they always did do, and then they go to the turnout houses. But by that time, so many of them partied out and was ready to go to bed. Because Friday night, see, they always had a concert on Friday night. And they were pretty well wore out, so they went to bed. Some of them didn't, but you'd have to get out to some of them still running around.
I bet you were glad when it was over.
I was, because I was on the move for 72 hours, because they see the start on Thursday night. After we got the pavilion over here, then started having a concert over on Thursday night and a dance on Friday night. I missed Friday night, and they had the dance. And then by that time, it was pretty well wore out, and you finally went to bed. And I think the other 72 hours, I was sometimes lucky to get as many as 3 or 4 hours sleep, because I was on the move all the time. I still can't think of that other story I wanted to tell. Hate to get old. Mind slips.
Well, mine's already given out. How about when the students were in costumes? How did you know who was who? Could you tell with their faces covered up?
They very seldom didn't do that. Most of the time, lots of the time, best part of the time is all in tuxedos. They used to have this thing in the dining hall when they first started having it. Mm-hmm. And after they got the new gym built, then they moved it over there because the dining hall had gotten too small for that group. So they took it over there.
And how about the other big event that happens, not quite as often, but it's mock convention?
Well,
you have a lot of big names on campus then.
Yeah, we did. But we never had any problems.
Did you have to get involved in security with?
Oh yeah, we was always around. Like the time they brought all the North here. And of course he's had a son and daughter here then. And so my wife and I took one of the station wagons and went up to Roanoke to pick him up. He didn't come in big airport, he come in over at the smaller and private plane, and he had these two armed guards with him. And I tried to tell him. I said, "You have nothing to worry about. Oh no, we gotta be there with these weapons." I said, "Well, suit yourself, but you don't have anything to worry about because these kids are not gonna bother him or say anything to him." "How you know?" I said, "I know." And nobody did. And so next time he came back, I don't think he had any armed guard with him.
So he had a son and daughter who went here?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Huh.
She was a nice kid, and he was a good boy. They both graduated.
I didn't realize that. That's interesting. Yeah, there have been a lot of famous people who've come through here. Does that complicate the job of security?
Mm-hmm. No. All we did is just be around. And like when he was here, they brought in, they had a state trooper and a couple of city policemen in there. Of course, the state trooper was in civilian clothes, but he was armed. Just like at the time, you know, Coach Fallon, who was a wonderful man. And he was an ex-Marine too. and so was I. So he was looking for girl managers for the football team. And I told him about her coming through here. And so he said, Ring, she'd like to be a manager? So she comes through the matriculation line. Burdette was working with me at the time. And taking her card, and I said, was that her? And he said, yes, so I called her back. She'd already signed up to be a soccer manager. I said, would you like to be a football manager? She said, yes. I said, go see Coach Fallon. So he did. And after a lot of people found out she was here, Coach Fallon told us, says, well, I'll tell you. He said, if you have any problems around here, he said, you come get Murph and I. He said, we'll take care of it. So nobody ever bothered.
And who is this?
Oliver North's daughter.
Oliver North's daughter. Okay, that's what I thought you meant. Yeah. I just wanted to be sure.
Huh. So we didn't have any problem.
Oh, no, I would think the students would be very welcoming to her here.
They did, because a lot of people, a lot of students, you liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody heckled in that night or nothing.
Now, how about when somebody like, this year it was Dan Quayle, but did you have Secret Service coming around very often?
If they were here.
Now you were here when Truman was here, yeah. In 1960.
And I was here when Barkley died over in the gym, too.
What do you remember about that?
I don't know. I was over town. I was still a policeman then. I was over town and found out about it, so we come over. And they pronounced him dead on the stand. And one time, I was getting ready for some kind of, I don't know if it was my convention or what it was, he got a bum call. So I went over, practically by myself, and searched that whole building. We never could find any bum.
I've heard about that. I'm trying to remember what year that was.
I know, it was in the 60s.
I've heard about that.
Well, we never could find one.
Was that exciting, searching for a bomb?
I didn't know. I didn't know if it was in there. I didn't know what time it might blow up. But it did. There wasn't anything in there.
Yeah, we've had all kinds of people come through here. Barry Goldwater.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you name it. They've been here.
Clinton.
Were you there when he played the saxophone?
At the Zon Pavilion?
Uh-huh.
No. I didn't mess around at that too much.
You don't go out to Zalman's, or didn't go?
No, I didn't go that night because a couple of other men went. One night they were having the senior party at the Zon Pavilion, and the student, who was the president of the activity board, said there's going to be a lot of people coming out that night not wanting to pay to get in, pay their dues, and they hadn't paid them. So Steve and I went out there, and Tommy was over in the crowd, and I think between Steve and I, we collected over $3,000 for them, for those guys to pay for all that stuff. He had VMI cadets out there out of the uniform, because they always come back, start summer school before we get out. And we they took let them in, so we charged them $5 a piece to get in, and they didn't mind.
Good deal for $5.
Yeah. And well, then we all told we had over $3,000 we collected.
So I went to a party at Zalman's during alumni weekend. That's a long, twisty road getting out there.
Yeah. It's a bad road, especially when somebody's drinking.
Have you ever come upon a situation?
What?
An accident, come and seen?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, I've seen some bad ones where guys got hurt pretty bad, but they was lucky they didn't get killed. the Diamond Army one night years and years ago, and this, he drunk, he stepped out in the street and one of these old Dodges, you know how the ram used to sit up on the old Dodge, a ram head, he mm-hmm. right in the chest. And he died in my arm. He wasn't a student, he was some local person.
I guess it's not only Zolmans, there are a lot of students who live out in country houses, too.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them live everywhere. And you can't do much about it either because it's too much territory to try to cover.
So if you know that there's a student party happening out of country houses, can you get involved in that? Or?
When I first came here, I had the authority anywhere in town, if there's a party going on and you got rowdy, I had the authority to break it up.
But not out in the county?
I didn't, no, we didn't go in the county too much. Mm-hmm. My orders read wherever students live and operate.
Where students operate. That's interesting. What does that mean?
I don't know. That's what Dean Gillen had in there, where students live and operate. But that went on for quite a few years, but the strict rules, and they finally broke away from it in the late 70s. And at that time, the school did not have as much authority over these fraternity houses. They've always left it up to the nationals. But since the school is renovated and own them now, they got more authority on them. They got them where it hurts.
What do you mean by that?
Grab them where it hurts. And then you can do most anything with them they want to if they do wrong. And just like Dr. Wilson, he wouldn't put up with this stuff. I remember one night when the Phi Gams, Phi Psi house hadn't been renovated yet. And so two of the Phi Psi's come out. The SAE house had been renovated. Two Phi Psi's come out, begins to throw empty bottles. So they broke a window and happened to be in the house mother's room. And she was in there. And so, well, I think SAE started. Because they hadn't fixed their house. He messed that house up, broke out a couple of windows, and they come out and retaliated. And so when I drug on, and the boy, the president of the Phi Psi house at that time, he wanted to handle it internally. And Dr. Wilson couldn't see it that way. So he waited, and he called up his office one day. I said, Murph, I want you to find out who these people are. And so I heard some information about one name. Just give me the first name. I get the first name. So I got my Facebook out and yearbook out and looked at it. And he was the only boy in that fraternity who had the first name. So I approached him, and he owned up to it. And I said, who's your partner? He was a football player and the other one was a baseball player. And I said, okay. I already knew who the SAE was. So I told Dr. Wilson. And he said, well, I've given them enough time, now they won't cooperate with it. They won't tell me who they are. I said, well, here are the names. He said, why don't you go by the fraternity, each fraternity house and tell them I want to see them. This was the last 6 weeks of school. So I did. Went to the SAE house first, I told this boy. I found him, I said, Dr. Wilson wants to see you. Well, I'll see him tomorrow. I said it's today. I said, you better get over there. So he did. I went over to the next house and told him the same thing. So I had to go get one of them off the baseball field. That night, by 6 o'clock, all three of them was on the way home. Simple reason why they wouldn't, the reason they didn't cooperate with him, and he decided to fix them. He did. He sent them home for the last 6 weeks of school.
So they weren't really expelled.
They were suspended for the last 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That's dramatic.
There was another one. He was a Phi Gamma, I think he was. He was living down in Woods Creek. Some girl there was all shook up. It was that he'd been harassing her. But I called her on the telephone. And so I was down at VMI watching a lacrosse game. And my pager went off and was just watching Washington Lee play. And it was a minority dean wanted me to go down there. So I went on down there, and she'd get, put one of my men in the place with her. And I told him, I said, listen, I said, you get back out of here and you beat. And so I asked the young lady, I says, has this boy been here in your room and knocking on your door, bothering you? She says, no, just calling on the telephone. And so I said, told Sam, I said, get on back out on your beat. And I called Dr. Wilson and told him what he said, what was going on. And then he says, I want to see that young man. So this is how I left her apartment, started back out here, he come. Going up to get dressed for a big party that night. And I told him, I said, Dr. Wilson wants to see you. He says, all right, okay. So I went back upstairs and I told him. He says, that's not what I want, Murph. He says, you tell him we'll get the hell up here right now. I said, yes, sir. So I went and told Sam, I said, Sam, take him up to Dr. Wilson's house. That night, he was gone home.
So Wilson had a pretty strict...
He didn't like his foolishness. He didn't like it one bit.
And was that a change from previous administrations?
Who did he replace? Dr. Hunley?
Mm-hmm.
No, Dr. Hunley's a pretty strict man, too. And the one before that was Dr. Cole. Of course, he's passed on now. He always called me Sheriff.
Sheriff, that's great.
I'd be standing there in the parking lot right after lunch. He was a great handball player. Loved to play handball. Never wore gloves. I'd be standing out there watching traffic, and he'd come along and say, hey, Sheriff, what are you doing? I said, just watching traffic. He says, come on, let's go. He'd take me and make me play handball with him. Oh, he was something. Call me Sheriff.
Tell me about Dr. Cole. I don't know much about him.
He was a wonderful man. And I really enjoyed him. He was a down-to-earth man. And one time he was over there getting ready to play handball about 1 o'clock. It was four of us who were going to play. And one of the deans was in there. I'm not going to mention his name. And he says, well, I got something to talk to you. Dr. Cole smoked cigarettes. He always sit around and he'd get the thing and he'd rub his nose like this. And he started talking his business. He looked at him and he said, well, I'm going to tell you something. He says, I'm getting ready to play handball. I don't talk business. We'll talk later. We used to have some times. And I just wanted to, I learned a lot while I was over here. But I only had a high school education, but I feel like I graduated from here.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because you might as well have.
They made me an honorary alumnus. I was the first one.
I know that, and I would like to hear you tell me about that.
Well, it kind of surprised me. My wife knew about it, but I didn't. She wouldn't tell me. So Brian Williams called at the house and told her to tell me he wanted me down there at that morning at the alumni. We was having all the alumni meeting in there. And she said, why don't you put on some decent clothes? I just wore my blue blazer with my security patch. I said, no, if he wants me to work, I'm not going down there all dressed up in my suit. I don't wear what I normally wear. She said, all right, suit yourself. So I went back in and I told her to sit on the back row. I was outside looking around. I thought something was going big happen. So then went on through all this stuff about how much people give and how many, what class of how much you give. And then this very good friend of mine who's a lawyer on up, James Adams, I think that's his name. I know his first name is James. And I got up there and said, hey, one more thing, you got to reading off all this stuff. And you got down about the middle ways and that caught on. I said, he's talking about me. And he remade all that stuff and he made us come up to the stage and give my wife a dozen red roses and give me this plaque where they made me an honorary alumnus. And I just leaned over and said to the speaker, I said, I'm not a speech maker. And if I'd have stood down and tried to say something, I don't know what would happen. So I did. They all laughed. And I got the Pusey Award later on. And Dr. Wilson was there at that, and he said, hey, Murph. I said, yes. He said, what are you trying to do, take everything home? I said, no, I don't think so. So.
Well, when I heard that, I thought that was so cool.
What, it made me alumnus? I'm an honorary alumnus? Yeah. I thought it was real nice. And then I also got the Lynchburg Citation, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, that's impressive.
I knew all those people over there, too.
Tell me what the Lynchburg Citation is.
It's something that they honor some alumnus or outstanding person in their group they name one every year. So they named me one that year.
Well, I've heard about the Lynchburg Citation for a long time.
I've got it hanging on my wall at home. And I got a picture of Robbie E. Lee on Traveler. I had it in my office and I paid to have it framed and everything, and I didn't want to leave it in there, so I took it. And it's so big I couldn't find any place to put it, so I got it in my garage where I just pull a car and I can see it every day.
Well, that's a good reminder of the Washington and Lee Gentleman Supreme.
Yeah. See, I've had some times over here. Good and bad. But mostly good, thank goodness. I just don't, like I told you, I never like to see any students get in trouble. But sometimes you have to get them in trouble if they don't do right. You were talking about honor violations. I'm not proud of it, but I expect 50, maybe 20 of them all kicked out of here.
In 30 years, that sounds about right.
Well, I wasn't proud of it, but it's something I had to do. I miss a job, but I don't miss prowling around all hours of the night like I used to.
Is your wife glad to have you home?
Yes, she wants to know where I am every 5 minutes.
She must have been an awfully patient lady all those years.
That's why we never had any children, because I never was at home. Been married 52 years this past April.
That's quite a record. She earned those roses.
Yes, she. And it's like my wife said in the Alumni magazine, the time I was, had us both in there. So maybe when he retires, he'll know the way home. I can't go anywhere now if she don't go with me. But I guess she wants to keep an eye on me because we both had slight heart attacks, so to say. I didn't take no medicine then. I just look around. Just barely bumped my hand, I bruised. Taking that Coumadin blood thinner.
Uh-huh.
I mean, doctor says I can't have an irregular heartbeat. It never showed up when I was playing all that handball.
You know, one person we really didn't talk much about is President Huntley. What was he like?
He was a real smart man. He handled things real well around here, especially back when he was having it with the Vietnam thing. And they called off school or something like that. And he handled it very well.
Were you involved in that?
Oh, yes. I was there every time he had a meeting. And he used to, who is this boy's name? And back in those days, was leading this thing around here.
Jeff Jingle?
Oh, yeah. So, one night, he come to me and said that I found out that they was going to burn things around here that night, do things, go bring a bunch of guys over to the University of Virginia. Then later on that day, he come told me somebody stole his stereo equipment. I said, I'll make a deal with you, Jeff. You don't cause me any problems when it's over on you at night, I'll get your TV, get your stereo back. He said, it's a deal. I got it back.
How'd you do that?
Found out who had it. The boy had to go all the way back to D.C. to get it, but he got it and brought it back to us.
Was this a
local?
A local Lexington person,
yeah,
or a local student?
Local Lexington person that stole this stereo equipment.
And was it just a coincidence that it was Jeff Jingle's stereo?
I don't know. But anyway, we had no problems that night. He said, I'll make a deal with you. He said, okay.
So how much did you have to pay this guy to steal Jeff Jingle's stereo?
I didn't pay him anything. He took it and we got it back, so we didn't have any problems.
You are amazing. You know, one person told me that you are the moral center of Washington and Lee.
Well, I'm proud of that. I try to, just like Dr. Cole said, or Dr. Wilson said, rather. I've got all kinds of recommendation letters at home from a man who's a head of a school in Lynchburg. His daughter up here one night, and he had an emergency, he had to find her, and he couldn't find her, so I met him and met with him, and I took him to where she was. And he took her on back home to Lynchburg, and he wrote Dr. Wilson, a nicest letter you ever saw, but said it was nice to have people, a security man that would go out of his way to help somebody. And he appreciated it very much, and Dr. Wilson sent me a copy of it.
When did you get help? When did it stop being just Murph?
Let's see. I started out with it. One man, at the time I had three men here doing the punch clocks and checking the buildings, but they wasn't under me at that time. And so I hired another man who was an ex-policeman, and he and I handled all the parties and stuff, but we didn't have anything to do with that. Then they got the idea to let me handle the whole thing, so they put it under me, and they see it was Herman and I, and there were three night men. Anyway, had four. And so then I stayed that way for a while, just to cover the campus while I covered the streets, Herman and I. And then we went on, and we got larger in the following years, where we had to be around 24 hours a day. So we got larger. When I left, it was 12 men, 12 people counting myself. And I don't know how many he has now, 13 or 14, counting himself. But we haven't had any problems.
It's pretty miraculous, given how many people there are. How did you know everybody by name?
I don't know. Like when these reunions come up, I got stacks and stacks of calyxes at home. And every reunion class that comes up, I get that book to look at it. And just to refresh me, I know the faces real well, and then I just refresh myself with the book. And so when they come around, they say, I know who you are, and all that. So I always was pretty good at remembering faces and stuff. But anyway, I guess all those years of work paid off.
I guess they have, Murph. You are a special person.
I hope so. Anyway, I enjoyed it, but as you get older, I'm 75 now, as you get older, you got to slow down. I didn't want me to retire when I retired. I retired 69 and a half. I think I'd have been 70 in the following November, but I decided to hang it up because I kept getting these letters from that retirement we own over here, kind of discouraging, wanting a retirement date. I fell and hurt my nose the other day on a bank. And it's the last one I got says, if you don't give us a retirement date, you're going to start drawing this money by the time you're 70 or so, 70 and a half. So the federal government will step in and take 50% of it. I said, the heck with that.
That's an incentive, isn't it? Oh my gosh.
That's what it says. It said the federal government will step in and take 50% of your savings, retirement.
Well, that would move me to action, too.
Yeah, it did me.
Well, is there anything else you would like to talk about? This has just been marvelous. I'm so glad we got together.
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of things that won't come to me right now. Oh, and another thing. This has been in the 80s. Got a called me at home one night and said, there's a bum in the elevator in this building. So I come over here, I was by myself, I looked at that thing, looked at it. Up underneath of it and everywhere else, and I couldn't find anything. So about 2 days later, I was heading back toward the library. This young man stopped me at the wall. I said, Murph? I said, yeah. He said, I know you're working on something. I said, you do. He said, before you do anything else, I just want to tell you that I did it. He said, I was drunk that night and didn't realize what I was doing. And I said, well, I thank you very much. So that's when Dean John was still Dean. He asked me, what I told him. I said, well, I found out who the young man was that said he put a bomb in the elevator. Who was it? I said, well, I'll tell you something. I said, being that young man was honest enough and had guts enough to come face me and tell me he did it, I'm not going to tell you. And I didn't.
That seems true to that Washington and Lee way.
Yeah. So he never questioned any more on it. I mean, I don't think they've had a bomb threat since.
When black students started attending, were there ever any problems then?
Well, it was mainly not with the our own students. It was mainly local. I remember one night, Daniel was a boy that he was in high school at the time. He was a pretty good athlete in high school, and he was down there drunk. And there were 7 or 8 of these young black men there, stand there. And I had no respect to him. And this boy kept on running his mouth, and I told him, you better get going before I had him locked up. He said, oh, you're just jealous of me because I'm a football player. He said, still in high school. I said, listen, son. I said, I played football before you were ever born. And those black boys, they was just waiting for him to start something. And they all walked, and he left, and they all walked around the corner with me. Said, we was waiting on you, Murph. I didn't have any problems with it. And I helped them just as much as I did the white boy, white students.
They were there to protect you, you know I've had them tell me that story.
The black students?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of them told me that story, and they said you were so good to them that they were going to make sure you were okay, too.
Yeah. And one night, we used to have some kind of concerts over in the dining hall. This University of Virginia student boy was in there. And He come outside. I heard some glass break. I didn't know who it was. I couldn't figure it. And some one of the other students said, well, who did it? Went back in there, Murph. So I went in and I found this guy, his hand was bleeding. So I brought him outside. He wanted to get smart. And I grabbed him up in the collar, and he took a swing at me. He didn't hurt me, but he's pretty well drunk. There's a little small student, I can't think of his name. And 4 or 5 more come around. He said, did you see what that guy did to Murph? And all 5 of them jumped on him. I had to get them off. So the police come along with that time, and I had him locked up. And didn't bother the students. I told them he was just helping me. I'll tell you. Times. But they always, it seemed like me that if I had any problem, most of them was already ready to back me up. Of course, there's a lot of the kids nowadays are not, they're a little different now than you were then, in my opinion.
What do you mean?
I mean, just most of them don't care about anything. And they don't care who sees them. Anything, but a lot of those kids back in those days were a little more quiet about what they did. Now they're open with it.
Mm-hmm. Times keep changing.
Yeah, I know that. Every day.
Well, I'm just about at the end of my tape. Should I pop in another one? You have anything more you want to talk about?
Oh, there's quite a few things, but this back to the honor system of having problems over and getting them gone. And you got to hold some of this powder. You know, if you can't see, let's use the ultraviolet light. And I went down to VMI and had the chief security down there put it on there for me and put it in a billfold, closed it up, and laid in this boy's room. And there was two boys in there, and he'd been missing money. So I asked him, told him what I was going to do, and I told him to stay away from his room. So he did. And I noticed this, his roommate come in, went in and pulled the shade down. And stayed in there 4 or 5 minutes, and he came out. So I went in to see if the money was still in the billfold. It was, but it had been moved. So I moved it, and it was. So the boy called me, he said, "Where somebody moved my bill for?" I said, "I did, because I wanted to see, I saw a person go in, and I wanted to see if he took the money." So the next day he did take it.
And it was his roommate.
Mm-hmm. So they called me, and I got one of the head dorm counselor mixed up in it. So he stayed there in the room, and I went over to the library, and found this kid. Took him back over there. And I asked him, I said, "Do you have any money on you?" And he said, "No, sir." I said, "You sure you don't?" He said, "No, sir." I said, "Do you mind putting your hand on this light?" He said, "No." Put down the light and it lit up like a Christmas tree. He may have done his shirt pocket where he stuck it down in his shirt pocket.
Mm.
So the EC found him guilty and he appealed it. I went down to open hearing, and I went down there, and they was trying to say that that powder flew everywhere. Well, I said, "Do you remember doing the trial when we put that stuff on money and put it in the billfold and banged it on the desk like that? Then I run the light over it and run it on the desk." So they found him guilty. Open Karen, they found him guilty.
Boy, he had chutzpah, didn't he?
Yeah, that's something I'm not proud of, but I just wasn't going to let him get away with it.
Yeah, you sure can't. Let me put in another tape.